Startup Stimmen, der Podcast für Gründungsinteressierte vom Reach Euregio Startup Center. Welcome to today's episode of our Reach Podcast Startup Stimmen. My name is Greta Böske and I'm your host today for this podcast episode. I'm a startup coach at Reach Euregio Startup Center, the excellent startup center of the University of Münster, where I support people interested in starting their own innovative and scalable businesses. Today we're in a very special setting. We are live in our podcast studio at Slushed Enskede, which is a satellite event of the biggest startup fair in the world, Slush in Helsinki. In this podcast episode on early stage investing, I have two special guests, Anke Heuskes and Sven Degener, who we just saw on the main stage here at Slushed. Welcome in our Slushed podcast studio. Who wants to start?
Anke goes first. So thank you for having me. I am building out a new VC fund called MP Hard Ventures, and we invest mainly in pre-seed founders. Before I started this fund, I spent the last 10 years in the US, either working at companies in the earliest stages. I also started my own company and raised some money. And that's also where I started as an angel investor. So this is basically my next step.
Cool. Sounds interesting. Thank you very much. How about you, Sven?
First of all, great to be here and thanks for having me. Sven Degener, working for Deutsche Invest Technology, which is a venture capital fund based in Munich. We do invest in B2B technology startups, typically when they already have some initial product market fit. That can be geographically in, let's say, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, but also across Europe and selectively even in the US. We are right now setting up our first venture capital fund that is targeted at 100 million euros fund size. We are looking into closing that within the next couple of months until the end of 2023. And we are typically investing in companies, seed, series A, could go a bit earlier, could go a bit later.
All right. Thank you very much, Sven. Before we head to our first topic, we start with our traditional entry question. It's a big one, I know. Maybe it's a tough one, but you can just tell us whatever you want to answer on that one. Who or what inspires you personally the most?
You can start.
Yeah, I guess so. I've never been asked the question before. I think the people, and it's not a specific person, but I do believe the people that inspire me most are the founders that I'm allowed to work with. I do believe that they, in their life, do some hard or take some hard decisions that I, at least up until now, wasn't really able to, or haven't had the guts myself to really start something, to have that single asset risk eventually to build something that is existential entrepreneurship. And I do believe that everyone, irrespective of failing or succeeding, you can also replace failing with learning, that they have my utmost respect for what they do. So it's less of a specific person. It's a group of entrepreneurs that push technology boundaries and push themselves to develop great new companies around technologies.
That's a good answer. Cool.
That's a beautiful answer.
It is. Wow.
He's like, this is my first podcast. I'm like,
good start.
It was like,
that was great.
A 10 out of 10 answer.
Already. But how about you? What inspires you personally the most?
Yeah. So the first name that came up was this woman in the Netherlands. Her name is Aletta Jacobs. So before I started this fund, I also had a small angel collective, I would say, with other women, and we would invest in other women because our idea was we need more women to take the stage, to get in the arena, especially because there are so many unmet needs for gigantic target groups that are not fulfilled yet with the innovation that we have, but need to get funded. And Aletta Jacobs was the first lady in the Netherlands around 1910 who got her medical degree, who really strived for the feminism, to get a seat at the table. After listening to your beautiful answer, I do believe so many people, I think, in my life inspire me. But it's often also, if you look in my group of friends, the people who take the bold bets, who go the extra mile, risk takers who want to leave behind an impact that is bigger than themselves. And I think having spent 7 years in San Francisco, like, it was such a great melting pot of people coming from everywhere, taking a bet on themselves and go the extra mile to whatever they were working on. And to me, like, it's in the founders, but also the people who believe in us as a fund, like the investors, we had to go out and fundraise. So yeah, that's, I think in as a summary, the people who I admire most.
Also a very beautiful answer. Thank you very much. Cool. That was a great start. Okay. What was your first job? That's a question I would like to ask you, because I think it's a great introduction in how you used to get to work and what was your first perspective?
As like a real job or being like 7 years and like...
I think real job. So it could also be a small thing you did when you were a student or something. Yeah. First time you made money or something that you feel was your first job.
I think it was like at this university where I got in this position that I got the a lot of great contacts with the small and medium businesses in the area who wanted to get me or my fellow students to do research projects for them. In the beginning, I did it myself. And then I was like, oh, I can easily scale this. This is a better job for my fellow students than, I don't know, working in a supermarket in terms of like how much you can make per hour. So I started a small, with my friend, who was also a fellow student, we started a small research company. And that to me was like, oh, this is and fun, like, and I'm learning. And by the way, I'm getting paid pretty well.
That's really cool. So your first real job was actually
my own little company. And it never became like venture backed or like big exit. It was like a small exit. But I think I also learned because my second job was at P&G, like a gigantic company. Mm-hmm. But I also always remember like, ooh, I love that running my own company, really making like an incremental change. Like in Procter & Gamble, if you do things well, it's not that the stock market price will change because I hit my targets. Whereas if you've got like a small company and you're getting like three new clients, it's like a massive compound increase in terms of what you can do. So I think to me that was like a small job, but like an important one for, I'm 40 now, like an important job.
I guess it was. It's immediate feedback in any ways. That's probably something people often lack in bigger companies and jobs for big companies. And how about you, Sven? What was your first job or paid job?
This time you got the bright and nice answer. my first job was at a patrol station in the evening after school until 10 or 11 in the evening, which was interesting, I would say. Because you encounter all sorts of people of all sorts of mental states. But eventually, if I can turn it into something bright, I at least learned how to manage people that enter into a shop at late night. But I think that was the first job that I had. And then pretty much at the same time, but also switching in between the patrol station, was gardening. In a very small let's say company in my hometown, I loved in the vacations to just do gardening jobs, which could be hard, and I fell asleep at 7 in the evening after a super exhaustive day. But that was, let's say, really small companies both, and was an exciting time. However, it doesn't really sound fancy, but it at least taught me how to, or that at least you have to do something in order to earn money. And then the entrepreneurial part came later on.
But so you learned a very interesting startup skills in a very, very first job experience. So it was hands-on, it was...
It's creating and building stuff, right?
Yes, I mean,
if you simple, if there's a house and no garden and you have to build a garden, you still have to somehow come up with a product and eventually build it. Get your hands dirty, get hands on and build something. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the case for the patrol station, but at least it was for the gardening part, and that I really enjoyed.
So talking about investing a little more, why do you invest in startups in general? What drives you? What makes you do it or made you do it? What was the first idea you had of investing in startups?
I think for this fund, and we invest super early, so often there is no product or no revenue. But if there's this idea and you want to bring it to the day of light, you cannot go to the bank. Mm-hmm. If you don't have like a rich uncle or aunt. So where do you go? And I think it's super cool to be that person who has the full conviction, like, wow, if this works, it can become massive. And I would love to be part of that. And I think that to me, and of course, like, it's a very bumpy road. Things go left and right. Not everybody will make it. Like, the majority of the portfolio won't make it the way I would be hoping that they would get. But I do truly believe this is the best job I could ever imagine, having that privilege for the founders to be, let us be part of their journey, is something I think that you have to earn. Yeah. And like, it excites me tremendously, as you can see, I guess.
Yes, yeah. We can see that. Yeah, cool. But that's, yeah, I guess it's a very good feeling to be such an important part of the founder's journey, right?
Mm. Yeah, so especially if there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, so I run the fund with my two founders, two partners, and one of them, like, he keeps saying me, like, when he went out, like, 15 years ago, raising for his company, that the first $50,000 ticket that he remembered so vividly, like, later when I'm growing old, when I'm successful, I want to be that person who pays it forward, basically. So I think, and of course, like, if you're an angel investor, you might have different reasons why you want to invest in the company first, like a fund. Like, I've got a... My fund is like a financial product and I have to make the right returns to LPs. And we can also talk about angel investing. Like, I've made different choices and invested in companies just because I wanted them to give a chance, because I was like very passionate about the product. So I think depending on the type of fund or the type of investor, there are different reasons why you would go for it.
Yes. So impact on all different levels.
Yeah.
Cool. And how about you, Sven?
I believe when I worked at Novelty before, during my studies, after my studies, in between my studies, and what I saw in this ecosystem is that there are so many super bright, smart people from all sorts of backgrounds, and they are developing technologies that are stunning and that have the potential to change the world. Sometimes I also don't understand what they're doing because it's so deep tech, but I think that's part of the job, to understand over time what people are working on. But it was so let's say stunning and amazing how people come up with new technologies and new ways to solve problems, that I thought, what is the maximum impact that I can have to accelerate this? Because eventually, and also how we at DI Technology invest is, we want to have it, I mean, it's part of our name, we want to invest in technology companies because we truly believe, and we are all either founders or ex-operators within the investment team, that there is a European edge when it comes to technology. And I do believe that the Netherlands has a great potential. I do believe that Germany and the rest of Europe has, or that they have great potential. And I wanted to be part of that potential and ideally even drive that potential forward. And then it was a question, doing something yourself or at least helping others. And for the stage in my life, I decided to help ideally many others to realize their visions about technology and changing the world. And that's I think the joy and the passion that comes in this job. And that's why I totally agree with you. It's the one of the coolest jobs there are. And I wouldn't change it, except for founding something myself.
I see. But I actually feel what you say, because as a startup coach, we're also right on the side of the team in a very different way than you are, but also very close, doing ups and downs together and just mastering all the burdens that come up and celebrate everything that works out well. That's actually really cool. So you're really with them, and you are very important for the founders as investors.
Yeah, I believe that the founders are the important part. I mean, the investors can only, and don't speak for everyone here or for every investor, but I still do believe that the investors are just a small, tiny part of the equation, because the real bad business and the real hands-on stuff that has to be done and has to be achieved is really on the founders. And I do not like if there is, let's say, the investor in the spotlight, because I do believe that every founder should be in the spotlight. And I think that there is still room for improvement within Europe to allow really early stage ideation to really take off. And I mean, that's why there's Reach, and that's why there's Novelty, and that's why I truly believe that those ecosystems are so important, maybe even more important than the capital that comes eventually once there is something. And what I like, especially about your case, you're investing in the earliest stages, and that's, I think, so important, because then only then ideas can, if they are venture ideas, only then they can really spark and develop themselves. So it's all about the founders, in my perspective.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
we're just the supporters, but we're doing our best
at the sidelines and cheering as good as we can.
And we're cheering a lot, I think, all of us, especially today at Slushed. What is particularly important to you about startups for your investment decision?
In terms of metrics, or
yeah, whatever you like, and I don't know which metrics are important for you, or what's most important for you. Is it just one single thing, or a whole combination of facts?
So for us, when we set up the fund, and our fund is 10 million, so it's a smaller fund, and it's just the three of us. So when we started the fund, we created a thesis around where we feel that the world is heading towards, so where the biggest growth will happen, in combination with where we have the most expertise. So we have a pretty specialized fund. We basically invest in the different layers of abstraction around like infrastructure, developer tools, creator tools, like very specific. So a lot of the pitch decks that I get, or founders that I talk to who are creating like consumer products or marketplaces, that's outside of our scope, because we don't understand that business enough to make a bet so early. So I think that's already like a big criteria, because that excludes a lot of the incoming pitch decks that I receive. And then when it fits within the thesis, then we have this process. And obviously it's a lot about the founder, why she or he and the team would be the right team to back to solve this problem. Like, do they have an unfair advantage either because of their previous work experience, or what happened to their life, why they're so keen to disrupt this specific space. And then we look a lot on the technical part of the startup. So we invest also often like in more the deep tech companies, because that's also a part for us where maybe the defensibility lays. So it's not like just a marketing play, because I always ask myself, so what if there's like another team and they do raise 10 million? Like, what makes that my team keep standing up and has a good chance to become the winner in this market? So it's a lot about that defensibility, that we have to make the assessment pretty early on. And obviously, if this market is big enough, like these are like, I think that the general things that the VCs look at. But yeah, so that's a little bit our framework. Mm-hmm. Do they have like a unique wedge? What's their mode? So it's not like a 1-30-minute conversation. We often have multiple conversations with our full team, and also their full team, also for the founders to assess, like, are we the right players on their team? Like, what do we bring on the table that they need? So I think it's definitely like a two-way street over there as well.
Yeah. I see.
I see that too, and I do believe it's also really depending on the stage you're investing in, and the stage that founders are in, that different metrics become more or less important. I do believe in early stages a lot is around the team. If it's about technology companies, there's a lot in the technology. Hartley said you can augment a team over time to become better and to become able to lead a big company. If you don't have technology at the edge, it's hard to maintain. You have to have speed or execution power on the one hand that you can rely on, so that you can get ahead of competition, or at least have some degree of defensibility, right? And for us, when we invest, and I said that at the beginning, one of the biggest trust factors that we see in a company is once they understand what the customer wants and the customer is willing to pay for it. And if there are early signs for this, then for us, there is a big tick in the box. Nevertheless, there is, of course, always with every, let's say, investment process that goes maybe beyond pre-seed or seed rounds, there is a lot of due diligence on all sorts of topics, because you want to reduce risks, right? But eventually, you want to have an overview of the few white hot risks that there are associated with that company and with that technology. And ideally, also an idea if there are, and usually there always are, you want to have an idea of how to mitigate them over time. And that might change for certain funds and certain approaches when that investors are following, because you need to have some operational angle there. If you want to change and mitigate risks, you cannot only just stand on the sidelines, but you have to manage your investment somehow. On the other hand, you have approaches where investors just say, I give you money, I trust in the team, and let's see where they end up. And I truly believe it depends on the stage on the one hand, but also on the investment thesis and the way how the fund is investing. And there we can talk. There are data models even where people try to use machine learning to predict startup success. They have thousands of parameters and variables that are being taken into consideration, internal and external. So it's rather a topic that is super broad and can be super detailed, but I think it is really depending on the stage that you're investing in, that you are in as a founder, because of course we're going to look at matrices that we believe make a team good or a founder good or a company good. So the company should eventually also look at them. But it's really eventually also depending on the investment strategy.
And do you, if I may ask, mm-hmm. With the fund, do you have a scorecard that you put against the team, and afterwards do you share it with the team? So like, this is where we were like super convinced and these were the flaws that we might see in the future.
We do always try to give feedback in a way that is structured and that is transparent and honest. Would we say that we don't like an entrepreneur and that's why we don't invest? Probably not, to be fair and transparent here, because of course it might just help. But if there is not, let's say, a personality match, right? Yeah. Because we're going to work with them for 10 years, 7 to even 15 years, right? Depending on the fund lifetime. But if we don't feel that there is a click, then we need to somehow transport that message, but also in a way that founders are not completely, eventually afterwards in a bad mood, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to shy anyone off or don't want to create a situation that, hey, just because you didn't click with me, it doesn't mean that you cannot click with others, right?
Yeah.
And I think you want to balance that to some degree and want to give honest and direct feedback, but also want to make sure that people are still engaged and still looking forward to talking to other VCs or yeah. founders if it's not a match.
And I think it's similar for you when you're saying that you're now like raising this first fund, that now that we're had to go out and raise this fund, like yeah. we got no's from investors investing in our funds as well.
Of course.
And I think it also makes me a way more empathetic investor, because it's so much about like finding the right investors. Maybe it's not the right time, like also within a fund, maybe they're over deployed, maybe it's outside of scope. There might be others. So it's not like a personal thing, but I think me building this fund from scratch like does make me a better investor, I feel, because you've yep. been on both sides of the table.
Oh, I totally. Can imagine that you do, because you can just build it the way you would have wanted it for yourself when applying for investments, right?
Yeah, and also coping with the no's, like yeah. whether it's from a customer, like of the founders, when they were hoping like this is a key customer that we're getting in and they say no, like holy mac, like I think you become more empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I would like to add is I think there is content like without or limitless content and articles written about what kind of matrices are investors looking for in early stage or even mid stage or later stage companies. But I think a super important question should also be, what are the founders looking at when they select a VC fund? Because eventually right now, and please correct me if you see it differently, there's money chasing deal scenario and not deal chasing money scenario. So there's it's not an oversupply, but there is enough money in the market, and good founders with good companies and good technologies, they usually have interest from several funds. So it's also, let's say, it should be a two-way street. It should not only be the founder, the VC looking at the founder and the company and say, look, I like this and this like this, or I see risks there and let's say opportunities here. But it should also be the company themselves to really make sure that they select the right investor on the other hand, because there are mismatches with investors and founders all the time. It happens. And I still believe that if two sides are looking at this critically, it helps better than it's just one side looking at it critically.
Did you ever ask founders about those criteria?
I try to do that almost every time I speak with them, and that's 80% of my business or my time spent. But that's of course part of it, and we try to. It's also the product that we deliver to founders. I mean, we are focused on B2B enterprise and industrial technology. So one part in the stage where we invest is really access to customers. It's go-to-market strategy, or not just strategy, but really as in having access to those. That's why we have a super broad network of strategic advisors that are either former or active executives in DAX-listed companies, for example. We have, even within our team, we have board positions, advisory board positions in DAX-listed companies. And that helps us to, or we need to continuously develop also our product and our offering towards the founders and say, look, what is it that you need? And how can we be a good partner to you? And then, of course, we still need to select the right company for us and where we believe, hey, this fits. But I think it's also the other way around. We need to fit to the founders.
And what is it that they need?
Access to customers, usually, once they found product market fit. And good perspective, at least that's what we recognized. Or sparring partner of hiring senior people into the team, a head of sales, a VP product, or a chief revenue officer for some more mature companies. So that's something that we recognize is it's a two-way street, and it's important that both look at this critically.
I see. Anke, do you have any feedback from founders, what they wish for in finding in your investment?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think usually our first call is like 30 minutes, and then we try to keep like 10 minutes for them to ask us questions. So it is like this two-way street. And often when we invest, we're often the first check-in with some other angels. Let's say the company's raising a 1 million round. Together we're getting to like 400K. So then we're like, who is missing on this cap table? Like, who do you want? So this last company we invested in was a Munich-based company, and she was like, I need like people from construction industry. I need people who really know how to scale B2B SaaS, and I need some designers. So and then between the three of us, we look in our network, like, who do we know either on like micro VCs just like us, or maybe the angels, or one VC that we know will be the right partner for this round, but also for the next round. So because we're often in and we're not waiting for a lead investor, sometimes we're the lead investor, but it's definitely, and especially after we committed, it's so much easier than for us to go out and help them fundraise. And also like make sure that the investors that we invite to the table, again, like you have to like earn your spot, I would say, are like value aligned, have the founder as their best interest. So then together we check like their term sheets. And I think we might be a little bit of a different fund because we're more peers, I would say, like more like a bigger angel fund. Like also our ticket sizes are up to 500, usually they're 250. So it's a different ballgame than having like a 100 million fund. But for sure, I think to answer your question shortly, yeah, that's often like the communication or the conversation that we have with the founders.
But as you already mentioned the flaws, do you have any no-go criteria or exclusion criteria when considering on investing in startups?
I think there are never really hardcore no-go criteria. I think you have criteria that are really risky. Or at least I try not to say no to anything as in categorically, or say this is absolutely the one thing that if I see it I would pass right away. Self-reflection for founders is an important part. If I recognize that there is no ability to reflect on him or herself, then I get cautious, because the problem is that over time you have to be brutally honest towards yourself as a founder, I believe. At least that's what I experienced so far with those people that I've worked with, is that it's sometimes messy, it's sometimes bad, it's sometimes where you really struggle to get through the day. But eventually, if there is a lack of reflection and let's say, honesty towards the founders themselves, then I get a bit, then that's a flag for me. Because I also saw how this works or how this goes if that's not happening. And if there's a, let's say, lack of how this sort of ability to reflect about yourself and the ability to put things into perspective and eventually to get to a point where you are, you can leave your ego aside and decide what's best for the company. Mm-hmm. What is it really that I'm going to be suggested here? Is the investor really right about this, or am I right about this? And how can we find data points to prove what makes most sense, right? So too much ego is a flag. I would not say that I wouldn't invest if there are many other things super good, but it gets more difficult if there is not a match of how can you work together.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Anke?
Yeah, so on one hand, I agree, but on the other hand, like you've got like ego and like stubbornness. So like,
good point. Yeah.
I do believe like these founders often have to be crazy enough and be like, trust so much in themselves that if they believe this is the right way, I might not agree. But that's also, I think, where like this is where my say stops versus like I'm putting the money in the founders because I trust them to know what's best for the company. On the other hand, like if I don't feel good about like more on the in terms of values, that this is not the company that I want my friends to work at, like this is not a good person, then we won't invest, because I like I'm putting my life work in this fund as well, and I want to work with people that operate from the right values. So that, yeah, and that's I think sometimes more on intuition. And I think if you've had a few conversations with the founder, you get to know them better, what drives them, why they want to go on this crazy journey. But we do have a few of these founders, both in my angel portfolio as well as in this fund, that don't really listen to me, and they're like super stubborn. And I'm like, we'll see. Like, I trust them, and it's okay. They don't want to listen to me or to whatever research we put on the table, and let's go. So we'll see. Like, I don't think that Elon Musk is like very open for feedback often, but doing the right things. Yeah.
Agree. And thanks for the clarification, because it's ego and stubbornness. And I also still believe that being data-driven, because I still believe that people like Elon Musk can be quite data-driven and look at numbers instead of what do I want to achieve here with my ego. So I think it's an stubbornness often helps a lot, right? I mean, we wouldn't invest if we wouldn't believe into the vision. And I think that's something that you can really be like super stubborn on. As long as it works out and the data supports it, I would say. But yeah, it's tricky. And that's part of also the fun about VC. It's a people business. And eventually, it's always a negotiation that you're engaging in. Convincing, not convincing, getting people on board, or joining the founder as, hey, yeah, you convinced me. I don't know it. I don't know the answer. But I would also see it differently and exactly what you said. But maybe it's I should just trust you in this point. And that's also, yeah, gut feeling, intuition, mm-hmm. something that also makes, I think, good investors. And trust eventually is also being built over time. So I would also put trust into the melting pot of components of this equation.
Yes, but that's fair. So you're investing as people, and that's why you should trust your gut feeling at first, I guess.
And investors are not perfect at all. So
agree. Plus one.
Nobody.
All
is.
About the founders again. Cannot stress that enough.
Okay, as we are heading to the end of the podcast, do you have a short advice for startups who are looking for investment?
I think, to me, I just came off a panel where I interviewed one of the founders who's bootstrapped. Mm-hmm. Tremendous respect mm-hmm. for this founder, and we had a long conversation why you would go for external funding or not. And there's a difference, I think, between like getting some smart angel investors on board versus like a VC, because it is a different route. And I do believe in today's world where much more can be automated, you might need way less people to build the same product as you would need like 2 years ago. Now with GPT. So the route to get VC funding on board to build whatever you want to build might not be the best route. So I think my advice will be think about what type of company you want to build. Because it might be like, let me take longer to go on this journey, but keep the full control for myself. Maybe bring some small investors on board with like smart money, but stay away from like the key metrics that if you're taking in external money, it comes with consequences. So that will be my advice. Think about the type of company you want to build and what financing route you need to realize your goals.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. How about you, Sven?
I would totally agree. Entrepreneurship doesn't mean per se startup, and I think startup doesn't per se need or means VC fundable company. So I would also always advise to question, is it a fit with venture capital, or would it rather be something that you can bootstrap? Or there are these days so many different options of how to get capital, external equity, or even on a let's say credit basis. But selecting the right capital source is super important. Another point that I wanted to add is, if you build a product that shows people love to use it, if you have something where people say like, wow, okay, I like it, I want to know more about it, I want to use it, or even already using it, that's a super strong sign. And traction, whether that is commercial traction or usage traction, that always attracts venture capital. Especially if the benchmarks, and there are benchmarks out there, I mean, go on to the big US funds, whether that's Insight Partners or Andreessen Horowitz, they all have benchmarks on their website. They might scare you at first, but at least you have a benchmark, and then you can see, where am I standing? And I do believe that timing for fundraising is important. And if you have a product that shows traction, what kind of traction depends really on the product and the company and the stage, but that shows somehow traction and attraction from customers and users, then you just have to get the timing right when you benchmark accordingly to what, for example, a seed company or Series A company or pre-seed company should have. So benchmarking yourself against what the rest has or have done in that stage can help to get a bit of a guideline, hey, are we ready yet or not? Mm-hmm. And that's... You see companies that are not ready for the certain stage, or that have too big of an ask for their stage that they are in. If you raise 100 million for a pre-seed round, there are a few companies that manage this, but that are total outliers. And there's usually data sets available and reports available from all sorts of sources that help you benchmark yourself. And then it gets easier for the VC, because they understand, hey, okay, this is where you fit in. Your benching is pretty good. That helps to get to the point quicker. Is this an opportunity for the fund or not? And is the fund an opportunity for the founder?
Great advice from the two of you. As you already mastered our opening question, we also finish with a traditional closing question.
Okay, you go first.
You go first this time.
I thought so.
Okay, the question is, what is the most important thing you have learned from investment or general work experience, and how has it changed you? And take your time to think about it.
I think it's a hard journey. Like, if it would have been easy, everyone would have done it. So I think the true outliers, and we try to spot them before anyone else, but I think it's hard work, and I don't think it's for everyone. And I think I've seen it because I've worked in corporate, but I also have seen it at the companies in San Francisco that I was part of. It's a ton of work, and it's a really bumpy road, and it's not for everyone, and you have to be ready because it also comes with a lot of consequences, like things that you couldn't attend. You couldn't attend that wedding. You had to delay whatever, like big plans you had for the future, because it's not done in a year. This is like a long, hard, crazy journey. That would be what I've brought with me also now to start a fund instead of like joining one. Mm-hmm. I like the journey, but it's hard.
Yeah, I can only agree. I think that... having ideated myself so much, and of course, as a VC, you see so many different companies and you come up with your own ideas. But the more you work with founders and the more you accompany them along their way and journey and join their journey, you understand that there's so much that they have to give up. It's hard. I still believe that it's worthwhile, both from a moral perspective, but also from a monetary perspective, to do these kind of things. But I eventually got a lot more respect for founders. And that was, I think, the biggest learning, that looking at very successful companies, and you can name like at Celonis, for example, based in Munich, or you can also name a UiPath. I mean, those are companies that are exceptional, complete outliers, but it looks so easy and looks so obvious that they are there because they are there and they're growing and they're successful and big and made their mark on this world and on the business world eventually. But getting to a point that you find a technology that fits into something that no one really saw before, that is something that is so insanely hard. And I just have a lot of respect for people that actually manage to get to this point. So yeah, that's what I learned, among other things.
Thank you very much. Okay. A huge thank you to both of you, Anke and Sven, for joining us today here, sharing your exciting insights and giving us an overview of your work as investors. And thank you very much to our audience who listened to us today for staying curious about startups and startup investments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Reach, from science to startup.